Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. It's Brenda, and today we are reviewing a really well-made movie, but it is not an easy subject by any means. So I'm going to give you a little bit of a synopsis about the movie, and then we'll bring on any callers that are waiting or would like to join in. If you're listening, the phone number to call in to be on the show is 646-727-2914. My name is Brenda, and you're on Filmcology. Had a little bit of a different intro today because I believe this is a really important subject matter. And towards the very end of the show, we're going to play something I put together. And you can listen to the orcas tell you what they think about it or whatever it is they're saying, and with some music that I think is appropriate. So the show won't be completely an hour. It will be an hour. It's just that we'll just end with them. Anyways, for right now, let's go over the movie. The movie is basically told by all these ex-trainers from SeaWorld and people who were involved in the capture of these incredible animals to bring them to parks when they had more whales that were brought in from the wild. Now, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you see it, most of the whales are actually born into captivity. And despite the fact that some people might think that that's better, there's still a real huge emotional issue that goes with these animals that are designed to circle the earth and swim millions of miles throughout their lifetime. And when you look at a picture of SeaWorld from the sky, you see these huge whales and these little kiddie ponds that I don't care how much you think the amount of gallons are into that little pool, it is nothing compared to what these animals are used to swimming. And the ones in captivity, because our bodies and our cells have a real strong sense of who we are genetically and our memories and our instincts, they still have problems with being held in this captivity. So let me get on with the movie. This is such a hotbed. The movie starts with the tragedy that happened when a trainer was the last trainer that was pulled down into, in Florida, pulled down into the water, and she was drowned, and one of her arms were ripped off, and the fish actually ingested the, not fish, but the orca ingested the arm. Then they immediately cut towards the capture of how this all started about. And they, in 1970, they were capturing whales in the Puget Sound here in Washington State. So back in 1970, they captured whales. And what they did is they had guys in speedboats, they had somebody in a plane, and they drove the pods with the little babies to areas where they could try to capture the young, because as one of the capturers said, the reason they went for the young is because they were they cost less to transport because they were smaller. And the pods, according to this one researcher, he said that they were used to this kind of capture happening. So they literally, the adults had acted as decoys to drive, to allow these boats to follow them, while there were a few females that actually jetted down another fjord to try to hide the babies. And when they had the planes that were also watching them up above, when they realized what was happening, then the other boats turned back. They captured these, you know, baby orcas, and the adults refused to leave the boats because they just, it's like someone ripping your little two-year-old child out of your arms. And some of the adults got caught in the net, and three of them were killed. And the capture said they actually made us cut open the orcas, fill them with stones, and then we put anchors on their tails to sink them. And when Washington State found out about it, they banned SeaWorld and any of their agents from coming into Washington State to retrieve any more orcas. That was in 1976. And when they couldn't come to the Pacific Northwest anymore, they hightailed it off to Iceland, which is where they captured Tillicum, who was only 2 years old. He was just a little, he was a big baby, but he was only two. And we're talking about animals that are so extremely tied to their social pods that most orcas never separate from their mothers throughout their entire lifetime. Most pods are led by the great or great-great-grandmother of all the whales in that pod. So they're trained, they're matured, and all their families come up in this area. And even if some were to sort of go off and have another pod, they still come back around and interact with each other. One of the things that SeaWorld and a lot of these theme parks don't seem to get is these animals actually have languages that are inherent to each pod. And an animal like Tillicum, who came all the way from Iceland, it's like taking a two-year-old baby from Iceland who doesn't understand the language, doesn't understand the customs, and he's thrust into this park with these other animals that don't know anything about what he has to say or how he acts. And on top of that, he was quite young. So he doesn't even have the different kinds of maturities that you gain when you come up in a family. So then when Tillicum was in the first park that he was at, which was called Sealand Pacifica, he ended up killing a trainer there, And the owner and everybody was devastated, but they swept it completely under the carpet, and they just merely said that the trainer drowned. But there were two witnesses in the movie who actually talked about witnessing it. They were still emotional and upset for what they had to watch this person die in front of them. And then SeaWorld, who thought, oh, wow, we can get three more whales. They bought the whales from Sealand, even though they understood that Tillicum had a violent issue, and they claimed they were only going to use him for breeding, which they have also been doing, but they put him in the shows when they shouldn't have, and several more accidents have occurred since then. So, moving on down with this awful situation, in the movie we have research scientists who work with orcas, and they talk about the norms for orcas. The norms for orcas in the wild, they found that most of them live in the 50 to 90, 100-year-old range. They live quite long, whereas orcas that are held in captivity only live about 25 years. The ones that everyone always thinks about is Shamu. Everyone talks about Shamu. Well, the truth of the matter is that Shamu died way back in 1971, and he only lived in captivity 6 years. And Shamu is what they call all orcas at marine parks now. So people, when they think they're dealing with some famous orca, they're not. They all have individual names, but they're always called Shamu to the audiences. Okay, I'm going to get a little bit further, and then I'll let the callers on. The neuroscientists that have studied their brains found that orcas actually have a little bit more on their brain, a section that has to do with more social, more emotional type natures, way more than human beings. So their whole being is tied to their social interactions, which is why when the babies have been removed from their mothers, whether they're in captivity, which they do now, or they were in the wild, everybody who was around them talked about how the animals would wail and wail for days in the depression that would ensue, and the anger that mothers have tried to attack trainers because they were taking their babies, or they thought they were keeping them from them. And they'd actually take the new babies and send them to another park somewhere else in the world where there's more people who don't really know what they're doing. So anyway, I'm going to open this up, and we'll talk some more with other people and hear some of their thoughts about what I am starting to believe is just one of the worst travesties that human beings can perpetrate on the world around them. Okay, first caller is 314, and welcome.
Hello.
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 And we have another caller from 253. Welcome. Sorry to keep you on hold. Hi.
I have a question.
Yes.
I have a question.
Yes.
Are the orcas still being captured in Puget Sound, or are they allowed to be free in the wild now?
No orcas are allowed to be captured or interfered with in Puget Sound waters. They were banning that a long time ago. The only ones that are actually probably able to deal with whale hunts, and then they don't hunt orcas, are Native Americans in our state. They actually have whale capture is part of their culture. But that hasn't actually, the last time I think it was, I'm trying to remember the tribe, they were going to do a whale hunt. There was so much opposition, but it wasn't, they actually weren't trying to capture an orca. They were trying to capture a different type of whale.
So they have been propagating normally then?
Propagating?
Yes, in the wild?
Yes, there's pods that are, there's a few pods, certainly not the same population as before, but it's the world we live in. And a lot of orcas have to deal with propeller damage, dealing with the boating systems, people coming and going, people getting too close to them when they want to see them out in the wild. But now, because orcas, I believe, are currently being positioned as an endangered species in the Pacific Northwest, I believe, yeah, that there's definite rules about how close you can get with something like a propeller, something like that. I mean, there's kayakers who can kayak that are out in Puget Sound. They probably can get the closest to whales, but because they're not doing any, they can't, they're not doing any damage to the whale. They're just in an oar-propelled boat. So
I was just curious, there's no statistics as to how many there are in the wild and at what rate they are increasing per year or what?
Yes, there are statistics. I wasn't preparing for a research paper, so I was going to review the movie and talk about the psychological aspects of this type of action of keeping them in captivity and breeding them in captivity. I mean, they have what they call a breeding program. But for instance, Tilikum, he's a really big orca for a male. He was a really large one, and that's one of the things they always talk about and why everybody likes him, because he's so huge. But Tilikum is literally kept in a pen now. He's just kept in a pen, and then every once in a while he comes out of this little small pen so that they can capture his semen and, you know, perpetuate their breeding program. And then he goes back in. He's not supposed to have any kind of contact with human beings. And he isn't allowed contact with other orcas, I believe. One of the things with Tilikum, when he first was captured, when he was 2 years old and he was at the park called Sealand, he was raked, what they call being raked, where the other orcas were grazing their teeth on him. So he had all these marks all over him where they were biting at him and harming him constantly. And he doesn't have any idea why something that looks like him is treating him so badly. So he went through from the trauma of being ripped from his family, not being old enough to understand and not be mature. Then he's put into a park where there are other females, but they don't even know, like one of the researchers said, they don't even speak his language. It's almost like he's another species to them, because he's from Iceland, and they were probably captured probably from the Pacific Northwest or God knows where. But they're throwing all these animals with different cultural bases in together, and they don't really know how to deal with it. They can't get the affection that they are used to, because it's like, it would be like me going to Russia and expecting someone there to treat me the way my mom did or my family. And I'm supposed to somehow cling to whose culture. It's really tragic. So then he's already starting out with all these developmental frustrations and psychological pains and being attacked all the time. At one point they said they had to pin him up because they were afraid the other orcas were going to kill him. And who knows what they were bothered by, because they also came from other pens. They don't always get along. Then he gets shifted after the death to SeaWorld, and he's now thrust in with a whole bunch of other orcas who don't know him and probably don't speak his language. And as you can tell, orcas speak quite a bit. They talk to each other quite a lot. They're very tactile with each other. And the thing is, there's been no incidents whatsoever of any kind of violence between an orca and a human in the wild. There's been no incidents ever recorded. They're curious. They go up to boats and dogs that are on the boat. They don't have any kind of negative anything with the dog or the people. So one of the things that they were saying about these whales in captivity is the sounds are so foreign to them, they think that might actually be adding to their increased stress. The sounds of the water pumps, the sounds of the screaming people, all these different things are completely foreign to what they're normally experiencing when they're swimming out in Iceland or the Puget Sound or whatever body of water that they come from, if they were actually born in the wild. And then the babies that were born in captivity, who are used to being with their moms and taken away less than 2 and 3 years old, then they're all of a sudden thrust where? It's the most tragic, horrific situation that I've come across. And every single scene that you're getting through this movie is trainer after trainer after trainer talking about how things were at SeaWorld. Literally, they were thrust into the trainer mode. One guy said he was basically supposed to be a photographer, and he thought he was going there to be a photographer, and then they had him fly up to SeaWorld. This was a guy who was, I believe, in Venezuela. It was in another, it was a Colombian-type country somewhere where they had a marine mammal park that they had just started. And it's even smaller than SeaWorld. The pens are even smaller. And so his wife was saying, next thing you know, he's in a suit, the suits that you wear when you go into the water. I just can't think of it at the moment. And he trained for 1 month at SeaWorld with those trainers, and then he was the one that was supposed to train everybody else at this SeaWorld park to work with orcas. He had no marine life experience. He didn't know anything about working with marine mammals. And then he's on film doing all these acrobatic things with them. He ended up being killed. I believe it was in a couple years or within a year of doing that. I mean, the whole situation is, it's horrific. And his wife and his mother, when they went to see the body, they didn't want to show her. And she said that, you know, I just saw his head. It was just horrific that people are being subject to this. At one point, one of the secretaries at SeaWorld, they did a promotional stunt, and they had the secretary go out in her swimsuit and they had her try to swim with the whale, and one of the whales grabbed her and, you know, rolled her under a couple of times, and they were able to retrieve her before she was killed. And she wouldn't be on the film, but she talked about how horrible it was for her, and she just didn't understand why they kept putting people in the tanks. Since the last death, now they don't allow, supposedly, the humans to get into the same tank or the water with the whales anymore. But the whales are still being stressed out and put into these frustrating situations. And it's just, I don't see how it's going to get any better. They have noted that people are going to marine parks a lot less the more they're finding out about how these whales, or quote-unquote Shamu, is being treated. One of the things that the word blackfish is what Native Americans call them. And Native Americans talked about how they're not to be messed with because of their power and their spiritual strength. Some of the quotes that were in the movie are, they are an animal that possesses great spiritual power, not to be messed with. That was from a marine biologist. All whales in captivity experience psychological trauma. It's not just Tilikum. And that was from a neuroscientist who has studied them, their brains, and their behaviors. And she was also saying that they have highly elaborated emotional lives. So it's not just as simple as for us, who most of us, we meet someone and we go off. We may not see our family or our friends. We just go start a new life. That generally doesn't happen with orcas. I mean, there are some orcas who end up lost from their pods. Somehow they either got turned around or they strayed a little far. There was a orca whale that was in Pacific Northwest who was lost from his pod for a couple of years, and people wanted to get involved and try to push him out or do this and do that. And he actually found his way back out. For what they know, he was able to get back to his family. So, I mean, if you believe in God, you have to think that at some point there's a way for this to be worked out without our assistance. And I do believe that mankind has helped out some animals, but we've done a lot of damage, and we apparently continue to do a lot of damage. We're not talking about a life or death situation for orcas. Aren't killing us. You know, we're killing them. We're affecting them. And for what reason? So that you can see him behind glass? Or that he can do some stupid pet tricks? I don't see it. I don't even think children appreciate that fall in love with these animals. The reason movies like Free Willy are out there is because children, I mean, they want to admire animals, but we're the ones that are teaching them that they should do it behind a glass and in a pen. Anyway.
So, pardon me, so the main way of perpetrating orcas in captivity is through captivity breeding, and those orcas born that way, of course, have never known any freedom. Do they ever know the family?
Well, they have their mother that they're taken away from.
Oh, then they're separated.
Yeah, they take them, you know, that's why you have a breeding program, so that you can perpetuate your situation, because people have been clamping down on the captured, well, basically, I call it abduction of orcas, because it's just inhumane the way that they went about it. And then they're not adding in the fact that these are extremely complex social animals, and so then you're going to take them away so that they can be in your little show and do what? One of the things that happened, they were talking about the woman who died, the last trainer, by Tillicum. Tillicum, who's already had all these traumas coming through since he was 2 years old. So that was, I guess, probably around 1976 or something like that. So he's getting older for captivity standards, and there's not much to his life except when they masturbate him to collect his sperm and then leave him locked up. Then he was with this trainer. They get fish treats. And one of the things that one of the other trainers was saying, she didn't have a whole lot of fish left in her food, her pail. And he said that the orcas actually can tell when you're getting to the bottom of the pail because of the way it sounds with the ice that's in the pail. And she made him do this thing where he waves to the crowd and he goes around the pen. And they said the way that she whistled or she would send a signal, they didn't think that Tillicum actually heard it, because she only wanted him to go halfway and he went the whole way, which, you know, obviously it's not what he wants to do. It's what she's trained him to do. And so he did what she wanted him to do, even more, because he didn't understand. She said, stop. And then she comes around, and one of the things he was saying is, trainers don't give a piece of fish to you if you don't do it a trick exactly as they want it. So he did this thing, and then he didn't get the treat. So he's sort of like almost a little boy who just, why didn't I get my treat? And then she wanted him to do something else, and he did it, and she didn't have hardly any fish left. So he was getting less reinforcement for more required work, you know, for the little time that he has outside of the lockup. And they said that they could tell that Tillicum was getting bothered. He had a certain demeanor. And she's just paying attention to the show. And that's when he pulled her. So a lot of the trainers were talking about how she was one of the most safety conscious of all the trainers. But yet, it seemed to me like they were really stupid mistakes. And probably because everybody's thinking about performing, SeaWorld, money, and they're not really thinking about the animals.
So, you would think that with marine biologists on staff, which I assume they have, veterinarians dealing with aquatic life, that they'd have more of a ethical standard in dealing with these animals.
One of the trainers said that they didn't even know that Tillicum had actually harmed anybody. As soon as there was an accident, they didn't share any of the details with the trainers. That was constantly talked about. The other thing is, all these trainers, almost all of them, came in there not because they had some marine biology background. It's because they were good swimmers, or they were in good enough shape to do acrobatic type actions. And one lady said that when she got there, the first thing they told her, she thought she was going to go through some training or something. She said, as soon as she got on property, they said, okay, you know, change into your wetsuit. And she said, get in the water. And she said, I was actually terrified because I didn't know anything about what was going on. The other guy that I was going to cite, he said that he was there just a few days when they put him in the water with them. And it's like a dream come true to work with an orca for a lot of these people. So you're sort of blinded by your desire to do it, but you don't know, you're expecting that a big corporation like SeaWorld is going to have standards. And supposedly they were supposed to have all these safety standards that were not in place. OSHA, that's when the OSHA filed a suit against SeaWorld after the death. And there's all this information that they were hiding and denying. There, it was just some of the court discussions were ridiculous. Like one person asked one of the SeaWorld administrators, well, didn't you think about the fact that, you know, didn't you think that maybe Tilikum might have considered violent acts in the future? And she said, well, because they said, you know what kind of animal it is. It's like, well, yeah, it's a great predator. It's a killer whale. But she literally said this in court. She said, you're standing there. She said, I'm not going to assume that you're going to rape me, but men do rape women. So why would I make that assumption about the killer whale? That's the kind of craziness that's going on with this whole situation. It's just a whole lot worse than people realize, and I just wish more people would pay attention, watch the movie. The movie isn't a bunch of people who are telling you about stuff that they heard about. They're talking about firsthand knowledge or sight of what happened and how they were treated. And one of them, she actually lied on the stand. And she said, I was told to say this, and that's what I did. And they just, The big issue about this movie is, and I think we all need to understand this, is the psychology behind how you're treated, how you're developed, is going to affect your life. Whether you're a gigantic orca whale or you're a little girl or you're a grown man and you had all these problems happen to you or people ripped you from your family. This reminds me of when Native Americans were taken as children from their tribes to try to assimilate them. Both in the United States, because the United States felt like, well, if you learn our culture and you learn our language and you forget yours, then you're going to assimilate into society better. As if the culture and the background and who these Native American children were didn't matter. A lot of these children used negative reinforcement to force them to stop even speaking their language. So I don't really see how this is any different than that time or when they took babies from slaves and they split up whole families because it was convenient for their pocketbook. How is that any different? And we think that's completely inhumane now. Unfortunately, before we didn't. So how can you then go and do this to somebody who doesn't do anything to to you. If anything, them being in the wild, in our waters, helps to foster a better ecosystem so that we can live better. I really don't have much more to say other than it's horrendous. I don't know what else there is to tell you.
Well, it sounds to me that orcas share a lot of characteristics with elephants, being very intelligent, highly social, family-oriented, governed by an oldest elephant in the family, a matriarch. Sounds like they share an awful lot of characteristics with each other, although one's a sea-going creature and the other's a land creature.
Yeah.
And elephants are known to be very intelligent and have wonderful memories and very committed to their families.
Yeah,
and try to protect their young and each other. And they've even been known to mourn over their dead. And for all we know, orcas do the same thing.
Well, they have them captured, even in the film, wailing when they're taking one of the babies. The mother, just 4-year-old, took the 4-year-old. I think one of the things that human beings do with animals is we look at them from things like their size. I mean, an elephant, you know, nobody's really thinking about them being cuddly or emotional because they're huge and it's beyond our comprehension. People don't really think about elephants getting under the blankies and snuggling with each other or reading to their children. But they as huge, as big as they are, they can do the most minute things with their snout. Hello?
Their trunk?
Trunk. Yeah, the minute things. And you see them, you know, just, you know, making sure that they have, they're touching their little one, or their little one will be between their legs and just, you know, leaning on them, whether it's the mom or the dad. And the other members are constantly really close and at hand. That orcas, people think, well, it's a big fish. It's a mammal, actually, and it has a live birth just like us. And they are constantly tactily connecting with each other, just like elephants. And, some human beings. My grandfather said, because he was really into nature and he had a bunch of bee friends and wolf friends and all that, he traveled around the United States in his trailer, and the bees would come and literally just swarm into his cab and just hang out. He had treats for them, whatever that they liked. They'd swarm in and they'd hang for a while and crawl all over him, and then they'd go away. And regularly this was something that he would do. And one time he was in the Grand Canyon area, and the little pups from a den of wolves had wandered off. How that came about, I don't know. But grandfather said that they were looking and howling for a whole day to try to find these pups. And as soon as the first of the couple of pups came hobbling back, when they finally found their way back home, he said, you just wouldn't even believe the celebration. That the whole group of the wolves was just jumping about, not just the mom and the dad, everybody, the whole group of them. And my grandfather said, you never seen human beings act like that when their kids come back home. You know, maybe they get a little, like, high or whatever, but you never see how everybody is just so overjoyed to see them back. He didn't have as much faith in human beings for their social graces. I can't really say grandfather had the best social graces always either, but he was definitely a man of nature. And I think we need to look outside of the fact that we're not all that great in our relationships and the way we treat each other. And we can tell when things are stressing us out in our lives. We can go see a psychologist or some other kind of counselor. It's true, there's other mental health professions. But we can go see a psychologist and talk about it. And we have options. Telecom has had this raw deal since he was a little bitty thing. And who knows, he's probably still, if his mind is even still together enough, he could still be grieving over the fact that he has no family. He has nobody that's really for him. And he has bad days and nobody cares. Because all he's got to do for them is give off, you know, this $1 million sperm stuff so that they can go breed some other captive female and start this horrific process where the animals are ripped from. It is exactly like slavery in the United States. They did that to slaves over and over. Anyway, Lennox, you're so quiet.
Because
there?
I'm learning something today. When you're learning, you be quiet and listen. You're educating me. As I'm sure a lot of people are being educated, because I didn't know all this. So this is very interesting to me. So I'm just being quiet and listening.
Yeah. Well, they were saying
one thing,
that,
though, Brenda, you tell people that if they are interested, that there is the member of Center for Well Research, if they want to learn more about the orca whales, you know.
Oh.
Or, yeah.
Yeah, you can go to dolphinsworld.com. It has a lot of facts there about killer whales and talks about information about humans interacting with killer whales, and it talks about
why do they call them killer whales?
Good question, because I was wondering that, because they don't kill us, we're killing them. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, killer whales they're the top of that mammal food chain. So we're supposedly the top of the killer chain for most things. But in the waters, killer whales are the top. So it's kind of like they can kill a white shark. A great white shark. There's nothing in the main marine system, ecosystem, that killer whales can't take out. Even though there are occasionally great whites that are quite big, but killer whales are more aggressive because they're carnivorous. Whereas, say, whales like sperm whales and baleen whales, they're not, they basically live on plankton and in the sea. So Yeah, it's a term. I mean, like I said, Native Americans called them blackfish. And I'm quite sure that Native Americans were able to observe their ability to hunt. They will hunt in mass. One of the things they showed in the movie was killer whales that were hunting a seal, and he was out on ice. He was out only on this one little island of an iceberg, and they would coordinate their attacks, just like wolves. Just like wolves. They're extremely intelligent, and they're doing what they're doing for their entire community. You know that, you know, each pod, even though there's several pods in the Puget Sound, they are very different. They are not. They have different ways of. It's like they have a different dialect, even with their voice. Yeah. They were talking about the one mom who they took the kid when it was 4 years old, one of the first ones that was born in captivity. And SeaWorld filmed it, made a big bundle off the advertisement. But when they took her away, and she was wailing and wailing, and what they had found when they compared some of her wailing was it was sort of long distance type calling that orcas use when they're trying to find their pods that are, or somebody in the pod that's drifted so far away.
Mm-hmm. You know, Brenda, also I wanted to say that when you said the dangers toward them, the sound disturbance, you know, from the vessel traffic and shipping, what about potential oil spills and stuff that we dump in the water? That also would hurt them, huh?
Yeah, that's got to be a given. Well, I really appreciate you, Lennis, and Gaetano for being on the phone. I know this is really emotional for me. Lennis, I had went to a zoo once with her and my uncle when I was a little kid, and I couldn't stand the little pen that this seal was stuck in. It was all rusted, and it was so tiny that I just kept bawling and bawling, and I upset my uncle. I think that was the last time he ever took me anywhere like that. But I just couldn't stop crying. It just disturbed me so much. And that was, I believe, Point Defiance. We had went to Point Defiance Zoo in Washington, which is way updated now, but... Anyway, I'm just pretty much at the time where I'm going to start this tape that I made, and I thank everyone who did call in, and if you are listening, and I hope that you enjoy the last of this. That will be it, and next week
we'll do stand-up guys.
Yes, thank you, Brenda. This was really a learning experience for me. I truly enjoyed your show today. This was very good because you brought something that we are not normally, which is true, aware of. You know, so, yeah, this was quite interesting. Very good show today. Very good.
Yeah, it was the movie. But I hope you stay and listen to the last 6 minutes. It's from my heart. Okay.
All right.
See you next week, everybody.
Bye.
Okay.
Don't hang up.
Nope,
we're not. But I
10,000 miles. 10,000 miles. My own true love. 10,000 miles or more. Rocks may melt, and the seas may burn, if I should not and stay a while with me. If I had a friend on this earth, you've been a friend to me.
Thank you for calling in, Gaetano and Nina and Lennis.
You're welcome.
I appreciate it.
It was very good.
I just wanted to let I just wanted to let you know that Jim and I have been listening.
Oh, thank you, sweetie.
You're welcome. I love you, too. Hi, Gaetano. Hey. Nice to talk
bye-bye.
To you.
Bye-bye. See ya.
See ya. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.